My colleague Brendan Christie and Penny Rifkin and Deborah Partington could not come, and because I was coming and I was a co-author, I have to do the right thing and show our work, which I'm very happy to talk about. Now, I'm going from Brazil to USA. Now I'm going to take you on a little tour down under to Australia to see some of our wonderful agronomic work in canola. To start off, I'll give you our results, what we're finding. We think that remobilisation from pre-anthesis or pre-flowering reserves may contribute more to canola yield than previously reported. And we think that those amounts remobilised are influenced by season and canola maturity type. And we think that the indeterminate nature of flowering, the length of flowering due to rainfall or continued rainfall, should be included in phenological models of canola to predict the length of a grain filling period. We'll come back to this. The background, in southern Australia, we defined what we call our HRZ, the high rainfall zone, that has high yield potential. It's a rainfall zone around 600 to 1,000 millimetres per year, and it's winter dominant rainfall, mostly temperate and Mediterranean climate. The canola yields in field experiments we've achieved around 8 tonne per hectare. Farmers achieve about 3 to maybe 5 tonne per hectare in that region. It's quite lower. And those cultivars or varieties around 8 tonnes come from European winter types that contain vernalisation genes, which we think is a bit of a problem in Australia because it's getting warmer. But nevertheless, there's high yield potential there. And recent experiments that we're conducting has focused on understanding how canola yield may be increased by looking at the genetic and environment interactions. So this talk is about identifying better adapted germplasm and looking at improved management practices. That means we've generated a large data set that we're trying to analyse to help us understand how we might model the crop yields. I should say that the yields of 8 tonne per hectare, we're unable to model that with our two Australian simulation models, APSIM canola and our CAT canola model in Victoria. We can get about 8 tonne, 7, 8 tonnes with that, but with APSIM about 5 tonne. So we're looking at reasons why our modelling is not matching our experimental evidence. To put you in the picture, this is southern Australia, the last bit of corner there in Victoria and Tasmania. The green shaded area is our high rainfall zone. And for those who know about wheat cropping, that's grown in mostly in the north, a little bit in that area. But mostly the high value crops are in this high rainfall area. The location for these experiments are at Hamilton in this talk. We have 5 years of data, 2010 to 2014, 7 field experiments, 60 cultivars of different varieties with different phenology comprising winter and spring type plants. The treatments are irrigation, nitrogen fertilizer rates at various timings, and plant growth regulators. And that means we have a range of seasons plus and minus the long term average. And it means we've got over 500 G by E by M combinations for our analyses. The rainfall, just to give you an idea over this period of 5 years of data, the long-term rainfall runs up about 750 millimetres. You'll see there on the, I've lost that little line, about 700 mils of rain by the end of the season is the long-term average. But it did range from nearly 1,000 millimetres in 2011 right down to just over 400 millimetres for the year. The distribution throughout the years weren't that different, but they were slightly different. So the measurements we took on this work, and I must say The project leader who leads this work, Penny Rifkin, has been very meticulous in measuring all these components with her team of technicians, quite fussily focused. Grain yield, harvest index, pods per meter square, seeds per pod, seed weight, the thermal time measured in days and day degrees, and between the different phases. Of course, the daily weather in terms of temperature, rainfall, radiation, crop biomass that bud visible at the beginning of flowering and maturity, with the stem, leaf, seed and husk components all meticulously extracted. And we've made an estimation of the contribution of remobilised carbohydrates to grain, but we did not actually measure those carbohydrates, and I'll show you how we did that. We had a simple formula we call a post-flowering harvest index. It was the grain yield calculated as the glucose equivalents divided by the total dry matter at maturity in glucose equivalents, taking account of the oil energy content and protein content, minus the dry matter at anthesis. This gives us a simple index. It's not a perfect index, as you might recognise, but it's a good start to give us some guidance how we might increase yields of canola. This graph shows the duration of flowering to maturity phase, the grain filling phase, in thermal time on the y-axis in graph A and B, showing the range that goes from around 800 day degrees up to about 1200 day degrees as the rainfall changed through the various crops. So clearly the indeterminate nature of canola is showing up here in this data. But I must say, most of our crops grow in that half end of that graph, so it's because we've got such wide germplasm here. That wideness is illustrated in graph B. You'll see there, graph B has a lot of words there. I apologise for that words there, but there are three varieties. The closed circles are later maturing spring type, Hyola 635cc, and the open squares are early maturing type, Hyola 50. And you can see the different slopes of those lines are quite a big range, 900 to over 1200 day degrees. As it keeps raining, the crops keep flowering, producing seed. So if we're ever going to model the phenology of this, we clearly have to take account of the season. And of course, the winter type, Taurus, has a different slope. That's the triangles there. Same slope, but different absolute numbers. Now back to the post-flowering harvest index that we call that. Over those years, this ranged from about 0.6 to around 1, in fact over 1 in a number of cases. The spring types and winter types showed a very distinct difference in this harvest index. Spring types had less than the winter types. And the irrigation had a positive effect of increasing the harvest index. I am not showing this data because it's quite complicated, all the combinations. And dry season appeared to have more remobilisation. That means a numbers higher, near one or above. And there were interactions, dry versus wet. But this graph is really the interesting one. This shows this post-flowering harvest index plotted against the above-ground biomass at flowering. And it's not a flat response at all. It's actually got a slope, a significant slope. I don't have the numbers there. But it does show you there are some numbers above one, which raises the question, how is that possible? Now, that you can have mistakes made in the computation, especially in the denominator, you could lose material and be misled. We don't think that's the main reason for that. We think that this is evidence of remobilisation of carbohydrates into grain. We just think that the problem though, that most crops grown in Australia are around the 5 ton around flowering level, so they have numbers around 0.6, and that's about it, that's all we see. So this is experimental. We've not seen biomasses around 10 tonne per hectare, or certainly not at 15 tonne per hectare. So it's no surprise that our models are not reflecting anything like this. So back to the conclusions. This year, won't forget, we think that remobilisation may contribute more to canola yield, more than what we've seen. We think that they're influenced by season, of course, like they are in other crops, and maturity type particularly in this case. Then we think the flowering length should be improved, the simulation of that, by including the indeterminate nature of it through, say, things like rainfall. We're continuing this research from the single site to six other locations in southern Australia, and this is a rather blurry graph from Google Earth here, but it shows in southern Australia, from Western Australia, Kojonup, Blue Lagoon, Hamilton, Westmere, Inverley and Cressy in Tasmania, where we're continuing the work, looking at five cultivars, two different sowing times, but synchronised flowering, so the winter types and spring are flowering at the same time, so we're not confounding all those things that do confound it. And we've got three environments as well, with drought and irrigated and rain-fed, using those rain-out shelters you'll see in the photos there, that we're controlling the climate. And we've got a large team to thank, of course, with the groups working with us around Australia or southern Australia, in particular the farmer groups that we work with, and many agencies supporting us with funding in an effort to try and boost the yield of canola much higher than we're achieving to date. Thanks, guys.
In biomass, which plant types do you think is more responsible for contributing to the post-flowering or your yield? Because you have taken the data of seed, leaves, and all those things. So, would you think it's more like increase in leaf area is that responsible for yield or?
No, I don't think. Yeah, don't think so. No, certainly the more numbers of pods per area. You know, that's the number one thing.
Yeah, but you have shown that correlation between biomass and yield.
Yes.
In that biomass, for each plant part, like it's contributing. If the increase in biomass is due to the increase in leaf area or
All of those. In fact, that harvest index has been increased. You're getting materials of stem structural material built as well after flowering. But we can't, I mean, we don't know the full answer, but we know that leaf area is important. But what's the leaf area of this? It's well above six, and it's probably not intercepting much light at that point. We've got large stems. There's also a root problem. You see the roots of these crops. How much is coming from roots? I don't know anyone who measures root partitioning, but we think that may be part of the answer as well. I'm hoping to get some students onto the task. once you've dug roots up for a while, you give it to students after that.
All right, well, let's give him a handful.
Thanks.